Hello and welcome to Mental Illness Unmasked, where peer supports come together to explore the feelings and struggles around mental illness. Each week we will have honest discussions, share stories, and take an authentic approach to helping people navigate through their own journey. Just a reminder that Mental Illness Unmasked is not a substitute for counseling or professional help. We are all peers who have the experience of living with a mental illness. Let us walk this journey together and enjoy the show. Just before we get started, I would like to take this opportunity to let you know that this podcast will be covering a diverse range of mental health and addiction topics that may be unsettling to some listeners. Each episode is titled and has a description of the topics posted alongside it. Have a look at these before listening. Remember, self-care is important, and if you need to skip an episode, by all means do. We'll be sure to catch you next time. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of Mental Illness Unmasked. I would like to start off with just a bit of a check-in. We are now on day 6 of self-isolating, and for many of you, that has been very difficult, and for myself as well. Being isolated when you struggle with a mental illness can be pretty fearful. So, you know, it's important to identify some mental health concerns that may be a sign of distressed mental health. Some of these symptoms could include, you know, fear and worry about your own health, changes in sleep or eating patterns, difficulty sleeping or concentrating, worsening of chronic health problems, and, you know, an increased use of alcohol, tobacco, or other drugs. Just, you know, be aware of yourself and realize what you need right now to keep yourself safe. It's a very difficult time for many people, and even for those that don't have lived experience with a mental illness. I really struggled towards the end of last week and into the weekend because I had no space to get out. I was exhausted mentally and physically, and, you know, I felt like my supports weren't quite there at that time. You know, I'm lucky I have a very supportive partner, and that helps, but, you know, my clinical supports and my peer supports weren't quite available, being that we are all self-isolated. I found that I was catastrophizing a lot of things, and thinking very black and white, like, you know, I'm gonna catch this virus and I'm gonna die. And I'm sure that could be a common theme for a lot of people. And, you know, I don't know if my body is excited for that or if I'm scared for that. And having that feeling leaves me really uneasy. So, you know, as more people face the prospects of several weeks of quarantine, or we have to establish, you know, our own ways of preserving our mental health at home. I think I mentioned this a bit in the last podcast. You know, create a routine. Make sure you're changing out of your pajamas and, you know, at least coming to the living room instead of sitting in the bedroom. Break up your day. Find tasks to break up your day and, you know, possibly change your environment for different activities. So you can be in the living room to watch TV. You can be in the kitchen to clean or cook. You can have naps in your room. You know, it's just, it gets your day broken up so that you're not all stuck in one spot. Take care of your body. You know, eat healthy, get plenty of sleep and exercise. I know that we aren't allowed to leave to go to gyms, but there are plenty of things you can do at home. And even YouTube has a lot of examples of workouts that you could do from your own living room. You know, it, for me, being a peer has always been about my desire to help people, and, you know, I want to help people not get in the position that I have been in for most of my life, and I don't feel like all the supports are out there. But, you know, if you yourself can help somebody, you know, listen to them, provide a shoulder for them to cry on. Many people are going through some of the similar things right now, and, you know, we can come together, like, because of that. Stay connected with people. You know, we have this technology for a reason, and you can Skype, Facebook, your phone, like, there are many things that you can do to still be in contact with people. And, you know, most importantly, take one day at a time. Right now, you know, with the catastrophizing thoughts, I'm thinking that this is never going to end, and I'm going to be stuck in this forever. And, you know, what happens to my job? What happens to my health? Why am I fighting? You know, those kind of questions. But with that said, practice being in the moment. Use your mindfulness skills. Be here, and not April 6th, because April 6th is a date that a lot of us have. But know that this will pass. And again, you know, together we have everything. So we are here for you. And I hope that you are doing okay. And if you need to check in, please, please do call or comment on this podcast. Today's episode, we get to learn what it's like to be a supporter of those living with mental illness and/or addiction. Mental illness is not quite understood to the point where we wish it would be. And because of the invisibleness of mental illness, people are often treated differently. It's hard to get the support you need, especially from family members and partners who often think, you know, just get over it. Research says that support from family and friends, it's a key part in helping those who suffer. And I would agree with that. You know, I grew up not feeling very validated, not feeling very supported by people. And it affected my mental health in a great way. And so today we're going to talk to one of our listeners who is supporting someone with mental illness currently and has supported someone with mental illness in the past. Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. And yourself?
You know, we're glad to have you on the show today.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So as people know, we are here to talk about supporting individuals with lived experience of mental health and/or addiction. So tell me about your experience with mental illness.
Well, I think like everybody, I think mental illness surrounds just about everybody's life in one way or another. I have been a supporter. I have had a few partners in my lifetime who have struggled with mental illness. Family members, friends along the way. Myself, I think, you know, there's been moments in my life where my mental health has not been at its peak. So I think, pretty much throughout most of my life at some point or another, I'm sure I've encountered or interacted with mental illness in some way or other.
Many individuals grow up with the idea that folks who suffer with mental illness are crazy. And, you know, I say crazy in quotations here because I don't believe it is a word that needs the spotlight. Was it easier for you to learn about mental illness and addiction earlier, allowing for more understanding now?
I don't know that I would say I have an understanding of it. I think that mental illness is a very individual thing. And I think it's also, if you're not going through it yourself, it's hard to completely understand what somebody is going through with mental illness. I think being exposed to it from an earlier age made me maybe a little more accepting of it, but I think it's been a journey for me as well. Definitely when I was younger, I didn't understand mental illness to a degree that I do now.
For me, growing up with mental illness was very difficult. Many people did not understand it, you know, my family included. It was so stigmatized that I tried to keep everything a secret. You and I are a couple years apart. Did you find it similar growing up?
Yeah, I think, I'm a bit older than you are. I don't think it was any easier when I was growing up as opposed to, you know, in the time that you grew up. I don't think there's that much of an age difference between us. And I think as you look back in history, it's only been more stigmatized as opposed to coming from a place that was more understood to a more conservative view on it. I think as time passes on, there's a little less stigma around it, but still nowhere near where it needs to be.
Very true. We're still quite far from what it should be like in society and our communities. It's sad to see, but you know, hopefully over time it will change. You have mentioned that you also live with a mental illness. Can you tell me more about that?
I went to see a doctor. And I was not really diagnosed. They just thought, due to an overload of stress in my life. So I guess she called it situational anxiety and depression. So, you know, I took a course of medication for 8 to 10 months and then slowly came off of that and things have been okay since.
Medications are great. They can be very helpful. That said, there are other forms of therapy that people often try. Were you involved in therapy or groups that help teach you skills to maintain your depression and anxiety?
I don't think so, no. I don't think there was... I didn't have any therapy, per se. I mean, obviously talking with my friends and having a great friend and family support network was definitely helpful. But other than that, again, from a situational perspective, change in my work life and personal life definitely helped that.
Are you able to tell when you are struggling? Are there any signs that warn you?
Anxiety, for sure. I've never really understood the depression side of things. I don't know that it's necessarily a feeling of depression or sadness. Possibly just maybe lack of motivation.
Okay.
Might be, I guess, how it manifests in myself. But I've never really understood. When I went to see the doctor, I did talk to her going in there saying, you know, I think I'm having some issues with anxiety. At the end of our conversation, she said, you know, I'm a little less concerned about the anxiety, so much so as the depression, which caught me a little off guard. I'm generally a fairly upbeat person and don't really seem to have those lows that you usually associate with depression.
It seems as though you have been a support for many people suffering from mental illness or addiction. Even more so, you've dated partners with bipolar and borderline personality disorder. Can you tell me more about that?
I think for the most part, it's, I wouldn't say it's any different than any other relationship most of the time. You know, most days are, whether we're talking about, you know, friends that have had mental illness that I've, friends that I've had in the past, you know, very typical friends that you go out with and do things with, and just being a little more in tune to the times when, you know, they're not so excited about going out and doing things, and understanding that that's not necessarily a reflection of anything you've done, just time that they need for themselves. When you're talking into a more intimate relationship, so partners that I've had in the past or presently, same thing. I think the same rule applies. It's pretty much a standard relationship, you know, typical. But again, dealing with those bouts of times when things are not quite status quo. But yeah, I don't think it's terribly different from any other relationship.
I think it is amazing and shockingly surprising to me that you have been able to relate to your partners as human beings and not as a diagnosis. I am not my diagnosis. I am Cass, and that is how everyone should see it. What is the thing that you worry about most, you know, when being a supporter of someone with living with mental health?
Is this the breaking point? My partner has attempted suicide before, so I think there's a kind of a constant fear in the back of my head of when is that day going to come again?
Mm-hmm. That can be tough. That can be very tough. I can fully understand the feelings you are experiencing there, being that, you know, I have mentioned in the past that I work in a mental health field, and very often I am worrying about what the person is doing and how they're doing and, you know, if they're going to be safe. Do you have any self-care practices or activities to help decrease those thoughts?
I don't think so, really. I do have a couple of very close friends who, you know, are aware of her situation. And so, I mean, they're go-tos that I can talk to and when things are getting tough. I think between the two of us, we keep open some pretty pretty good lines of communication. So I think that's helpful. I think she's well aware of, you know, my fear of what might happen. I don't know that that necessarily helps the situation in any way, but I think having those open lines of communication, she's very good at saying, I don't feel safe right now. And we kind of have a routine or things that we do in those times.
In that case, what are some signs or perhaps even symptoms that you notice when she's starting to fall down that mountain?
I think there tends to be a lot of mood shifts, and fairly rapidly. So you get the highs and the lows, and they start sort of cycling a little faster than normal. Sleep patterns are another big one. It's definitely a sure tell sign that that things are slipping out of control. Generally a little more withdrawn, a little quieter. And then I think there's just things that are, you just become in tune to. So there's not anything that you necessarily see or hear. It's just sort of a feeling. At the same time, I rely on her to tell me what's going on. Because in her case, as well as the case with, I'm sure, a lot of people, they've become so well adept to faking how they're feeling. She's good at faking it. To the point that I don't necessarily see it all the time.
You know, I really like that you brought up, you used the word faking. For me, in my life, when I've been trying to, you know, not share my mental illness or not show people that I'm actually hurting, I would put a mask on. And I wear that mask to the point where, you know, you kind of fall into that mask. You kind of become the mask. But then the depression, it deepens and deepens and deepens, and then all of a sudden it explodes. So I found that, you know, it's very hard to tell people because a lot of times people don't understand. We're still not in that society where it is very validating. And it's difficult. So I praise you for being able to have that open support with her. Does she have any other supports with her right now?
Yeah, she has her best counselor that she speaks to on a weekly basis. She has friends as well that, you know, have mental health issues that I think help her a lot through what she's going through. Helps validate the feelings and struggles that she's having. And I think she has a fairly supportive family most of the time. That could be argued one way or another, but I think... you know, all in all, they do have her best interest at heart.
So we've talked a bit about your life and the lives of people around you who live with mental illness and addiction. And, you know, I just wondered if you had any advice to give people who may be in similar situations or people who are trying to support somebody but are finding it very difficult to do so.
Yeah, I think probably the most important message is to remember that these individuals are people. Mental illness is not necessarily something to be afraid of. I know it's highly stigmatized in society, and I think you really need to take the time to just kind of step back from the stigmatism and really get to know the person on an individual level. I think whether you are in a relationship with that person intimately or you're talking about a friend or a family member, again, it's remembering that the person that you are, you know, that you're relating with is more than just whatever label they have, whatever mental illness they have. You know, obviously they have moments in their life that they struggle with, but on a whole, it's no different than anybody else.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. You've been very insightful, and I think this will provide some inspiration for people that are, you know, currently supporting somebody. We all know how difficult it can be. So thank you for sharing your story and allowing us to share it with the world.
Thank you for having me.
I'd like to take this time to thank Denise for her words of advice and, you know, not putting mental illness in a box. She's very caring and empathetic towards those of us who live with a mental illness and/or addiction, and, you know, it's not very common to find. So thank you, Denise. So I wanted to add a little bit more to this podcast in terms of, you know, supporting others and, you know, being an individual who identifies as living with a mental illness, I would like to give some tips for talking about mental illness with others. So one of the first ones would be is to allow us to share as much or as little as we want. We need to feel comfortable to be able to let go of what we are feeling. We are at a very vulnerable state at this point. And, you know, if we don't feel comfortable, we don't want to tell you everything. Maybe we just want to tell you that we need help. Or maybe we just want to be heard. And, you know, that doesn't go into as much detail as you would hope. But, you know, give us time. Because with time and trust, we are more likely to open up. This one is also quite important. Don't try to diagnose or second guess our feelings. What we are feeling is real. You may not be experiencing that feeling, but you cannot deny the fact that we are feeling this. And, you know, don't try to diagnose us. Don't try to put a label on us or diagnose us as being an attention seeker or, you know, just looking for something. We have the psychiatrist to do that for us. They give us our actual diagnoses. So, you know, stay at your level. Find time to talk to us when there are no distractions. We are the first people to pick up on whether or not you are listening to us. So if there are distractions in the room that you're in, or phone calls that you're answering, we will know that you don't. We will know that you're not quite present and with us. I think it's a good idea to keep questions pretty open-ended. Give us the chance to talk. We don't want to feel like we've lost power, perhaps. And you know, I don't necessarily like saying the word power, but we are the things that are keeping us safe right now. And, you know, when we ask for help or when we seek help, we don't want to be pushed into anything. And finally, you know your limits. It is important to know your limits and to tap out when you need to. We know that you still care, but that you are not able to help us at this difficult time. And, you know, importantly, it is important to direct us to individuals who can, whether that be another person, a caregiver, a doctor, a psychiatrist, the hospital. You need to take care of yourself, first of all, in your own mental health, and then you need to be able to, and then the mental health of us. If you are burnt out, you're not going to be able to give us that little bit of strength we need. So I want to say that, you know, I do appreciate all of the people out there that are supporters, and I know it is difficult to be. As I mentioned earlier in the podcast, I work in the mental health field. And just remember that it is also very difficult for the individual to be expressing these thoughts in such a stigmatized environment. So thank you for that. And know that we do have groups called Supporting the Supporter. When we are back up and running, we hope to see some people there. It's a chance to talk with other people that are supporting individuals with lived experience. And just remember to hold the hope for everybody, you know? Don't consider it as a lost cause. Just, you know, if you can and you need to, you know, hold our hope. And I'd like to talk to everybody out there that, you know, is struggling with a mental illness and maybe does not have that support. We can be that support for you. Self-help and peer support cares. We really care. And if you need someone to talk to, please don't hesitate to reach out. There is also Here 24/7 available where you can call if you're in sense of crisis. And the hospital that you can go to if you feel like you're on the edge. I want you to know that we are out there. We are fighting for you. We are doing our best to make life a little bit easier for you. And right now it can be very difficult with this self-isolating. I'm struggling a lot, but I have some supports in my life and some supports got canceled because of the self-isolation. So, you know, find your supports. See who you can trust. See who you can talk to. And know, we hold hope. I have hope that we will make it through this together. And to all the supports, I have hope in you. It takes one step to save a life. So thank you. Thank you for listening to today's episode. Be sure to tune in for the next. Bye for now.